Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Scheltemer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell Reed, and our guest this week, Linda Hutzel Manning. Linda, you taught in this one-room school for 2 years. So tell us about some of the more memorable incidents during that time.
Well, the first thing I found out, and that was from Paul Burnham, he was the first person I interviewed, he said, "I don't suppose you knew about the forts that we built." And I looked, I said, "No, what forts?" And over on the west side of the property, I guess the land went up a bit and then down, and then there was a page wire fence. And so they went over there, and he said, "Well, I guess we didn't tell you because we stole slats from the farmer's snow fence." Well, it wasn't the farmer's snow fence. It was the Department of Highways, but of course they wouldn't have known that. And they jammed them in at certain intervals, I guess early in the spring when the ground had thawed, and then they took long pieces of grass and they wove them in and out and made walls. And apparently they had three or four of these roots, but anyway, and then subsequently when I interviewed other people and asked them, everybody knew about the forts. And I don't know how, because I would ring the bell and they would all come in. Like, I would walk out and ring the bell. I didn't see anybody running from away over in the field. So I don't know if they had somebody posted and then said, "Okay, and, you know, 5 minutes, you better come back." So I don't have any idea. But no pictures, unfortunately. So that was one, a very memorable event. Another one was this incident when they were smoking in the shed, and I do remember quite a bit of that. I highly was very much against tattling, and I said, you know, if you come in and tattle about some superficial thing, you're going to get punished as well. So this boy comes in, very head down, very nervous. Mrs. Manning, they're smoking in the shed. And I'm like, "What?" And I jumped up and I ran out, and of course everybody in the yard knew they were smoking in the shed, so the whole yard went dead quiet, and I roar back to the shed. It's a wooden shed behind the school, I mean, with a dirt floor. I'd never been in there, I didn't know anything about it. And I open the door and the smoke piles out, and here's five guys in there smoking, and three of them are quite a bit taller than me. And I just went into banshee mode. I'd never yelled at the kids before at all. We had a really good relationship. I was strict to start with, and then we were more like a family. And this happened, I don't know whether it happened, I think it happened in the late fall. So I'd loosened up a bit and was, you know, we were doing really well. So this was completely uncharacteristic of me to behave in this manner. And I just railed at them, you know, "What do you think you're doing? You could burn the place down. And what kind of an example are you setting?" And they all butted out their cigarettes. And the ringleader gave me the player's cigarettes. And I marched them all back to the school. And then one of them said to me, "Are you going to strap us?" And I hated the strap. I just didn't use it because it was a hideous thing. And I just said, "No, because if I strapped you, you'd all have bleeding hands, because that's what happens when you betray a teacher that trusts you." So I made them wash the blackboards, but the ringleader didn't really care. He was 13 in grade 5, because you could leave when you were 14, and he knew he was going to leave the following year. Mm-hmm. So he really didn't care. And so that incident I remember very clearly. And everybody was incredibly good and quiet. Nobody sharpened a pencil. Nobody asked to do anything. It was really funny because I guess this wrath that I had that I had rained down on them was so unexpected.
What were the biggest differences between teaching methods back then in the 60s in a one room and present day?
Well, I had nothing. When I went there, all I had was a list of subjects and my notes from Teachers College. So there was nothing. There was no resources of any kind. Now, I don't know, in city schools, because I'd done my practice teaching in city schools in Toronto, and there certainly were resources there, and there were lesson plans and things that I could call on. So I had nothing. So that's definitely one difference. I was the principal as well as the teacher, so I called all the shots, and I had to constantly make on-the-spot decisions about things with no one to consult in a graded school, in a classroom. And I'm sure that a lot of one-room teachers would identify with this, that you just, something happens, you have to make a decision, and you make that decision and hope that you're doing the best you can. So that was very different, and our physical premises were very different. You know, we had these two, basically two outhouses, pit toilets inside the front part with a door connecting, and then two doors, right? But they were just outhouses, and they got pretty rank by June, I can tell you. And then one cold water tap and an old bookcase full of books that looked like they hadn't been touched since 1926 that were useless.
Wow.
So that there were a lot of differences.
Yeah. Well, on a happier note, okay. Now that you've reconnected with so many of your ex-students, I think you said 18?
Yes.
Yeah. And you've done research and opened up your own memories and whatnot. What is your overriding impressions of that time of your life?
Well, at the time, I was so busy just doing what I was doing, and I had, at that point in my life, I had not been to university. I had no idea I had ability to be a writer. I would have laughed if somebody had said to me that I would become a writer. I thought that would have been ridiculous. I didn't have the ability to become a writer. And when I looked back at all the things that I did, I was incredibly creative, and I came up with all these innovative things. I had a soup program in the second year. We had phys ed, we had home economics and shop. The Christmas concerts and taking them on the trips and a whole lot of the things that I did were experience. So I realized that there, my creativity was there, I just didn't know about it. I didn't realize it. And I learned how to work really hard.
Yeah, I bet. That's
and,
a lot to
and
take
hit
on.
Deadlines, you know, forced to hit deadlines constantly. So,
tell us quickly, before we ask you to read again, what are you working on now?
Okay, well, marketing at the moment. I am looking toward putting a collection of short fiction together and a novella. I have a novella that was shortlisted in a competition, didn't get published, and I have 6 or 7 published short stories over the years, and 2 or 3 more. And so I think I can put together a collection, and that's what I'm going to work on next.
Great. Okay, so give us some more of Fearless and Determined.
Okay, this one. People of a certain age will know about this. It's called Assassination. The day following our last exam turns out to be a date many will remember. American news has not been frontline interest for most of my students, nor for me that year. I'm too absorbed in lesson preparation, marking, and the general well-being of my school. Friday, November 22nd is a rare exception, one that consumes most of the class for the afternoon and well into the following week. It is, of course, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the charismatic President of the United States. This news is discovered initially by my senior girls, who at noon hour, while marking workbooks for me, turn on the radio expecting to hear their favorite Beatles music. Instead, they find a minute-by-minute update of the president's death with descriptions of the Dallas motorcade, Jackie Kennedy holding her dying husband in her arms, voice soundtracks of the chaos, bystander screams, police sirens, and general mayhem. All workbook marking stops. The girls in tears retreat outside. Within minutes, the usual noon hour playground chatter and noise grind to a halt. When I ring the bell, a somber procession enters the school, the little ones confused as to what has happened, but looking as serious as their older siblings. Once seated, Marilyn comes to my desk and asks if the radio can be turned back on. We listen for over an hour, a rerun of the actual event first, Kennedy being pronounced dead in the Parkland Hospital's trauma room, and as it is happening, Lee Harvey Oswald killing a police officer and being subsequently arrested in a movie theater. The older girls keep sniffling, which sets off the younger ones, most of whom do not fully understand. Even the boys are quiet, a number of them looking grim-faced. When a grade one boy stands up and asks if the bad guys are going to storm our school and will we get killed too, I realize I must explain the logistics of distance relating to this situation. I turn off the radio and pull down a map of Canada and the U.S. so I can locate Dallas, Texas. When another primary student says tearfully it doesn't look very far, I ask Joe Harper, who is good in math, to find the distance scale on the map and figure out the mileage from Coburg to Dallas. When Joe works out that it's almost 1,500 miles and would take at least 5 days to get there in a car, a number of the younger students look relieved. I realize how little they understand of relative distance, most of them never having traveled further than Cobourg 2 miles east or Port Hope 3 miles to the west. I momentarily think how exciting it would be to create a course around this topic, part math, part geography, part social history. Instead, I read to them three more chapters of our new-to-them novel, Treasure Island. Young Jim and his mother have just unlocked the sea chest, finding some money and a map showing an island where great treasure may be buried. The district squire buys a ship, and Jim becomes its cabin boy. Tension and excitement mount, and when I close the book a few minutes before the end of the school day, there are groans and pleadings to read more. I smile and remind them the school day is over and it's time to go home. They leave, many still talking about what would it be like to be Jim, to go on a schooner in search of adventure. Only my trusty three senior girls who stay to clean the boards and brushes begin talking again about Kennedy and the real trauma of the day. The following Monday, there is renewed talk of the event, increased in intensity by Jack Ruby murdering Lee Harvey Oswald while being escorted by police to the Dallas jail. I tell the children this is history in the making and that these events will end up in history books for their children and grandchildren. We already have a current events billboard, but to date, I am the one who has brought in most articles. It's time to formally add this to our curriculum, and I ask for volunteers to bring newspaper clippings and report on interesting Canadian and world events. What I discover is that most students' households do not get a newspaper, and of the few that do, the Cobourg Sentinel Star is their paper. Marilyn and Nancy say their families get the weekend Toronto Star and the Star Weekly, and if the paper doesn't get used in the stove, each one promises she will bring it in on Mondays. After a month goes by and no one has brought in any reported news, nothing about the Vietnam War or the civil rights movement in the States, I stop asking whether anyone has a current event to share. A number of families have TVs, but I have to assume no one talks about news events. Current history slides back to its former minor position. I'm too busy with the day-to-day pressures of teaching to give it any priority.
Hmm. Well, thank you very much, Linda.
You're very, very welcome.
Where can listeners buy your books?
Okay, they'll be at Let's Talk Books. They'll be at Furby Books, Lighthouse Books, and Kerr's Bookstore. It can be bought online through Chapters and Indigo.
Okay, well, plenty of options for the listeners then.
Yeah, lots of options.
And listeners, if you'd like to connect with Felicity and I here at the program, please visit our website, wordonthehills.com. There you can leave your comments or queries or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs. You'll also find all our previous broadcasts archived there so that you can listen to them at any time and from anywhere. We'd love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. Thanks for tuning into the show. We hope you'll join us for another program next week, Sunday at 1 p.m. on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.